The project that I worked on splits into various parts, and I think rather than explain each of those parts, I kind of wanted to explain my central preoccupation within the project, which was how to tell stories, how to tell the stories of the encounters that I had. And that was also my major challenge, because it was important to me to find these kind of nonsensical lives within the themes that I was exploring. So I wrote a story, essentially, with some slides. And it's kind of a story about stories. So story starts with a couple of mechanical tools. Tools of precision and documentation, a video camera, possibly some hands, a worker's hands, a material, plexiglass, and the means of its operation, of its production, a workshop. I was searching for plexiglass fabricators in Berlin because I wanted to shoot some documentary-style footage of plexiglass being made. I came up with a long list of fabricators and started at the top of the list and called that first workshop. The man who responded said he was the manager and I could address him with my request. I explained that I wanted to shoot footage for artistic purposes and asked if he would be willing to have me there. He said yes, he would be away for 2 weeks on holiday, but we could schedule a date 2 weeks ahead. I was very thankful, told him I'd be bringing my equipment and would arrive early that morning to shoot the whole day. He agreed and we hung up. I arrived 2 weeks later, equipment in hand, very excited to shoot footage. A secretary brought me to the office, the manager said hello and asked me to wait while he finished up with another client. The manager looked much less friendly than I had hoped for. He was medium height, clean shaven, dark hair. He wore a suit and a tie. In any event, I sat down across from him, looking at his reflection on his glossy plexiglass desk. He asked me to explain what it was exactly I wanted. I explained again. I could tell he was barely listening. I can't say what it was, but it seemed like he had lost interest the moment he understood he had nothing to gain from the interaction. Maybe I had come across as convincing enough on the phone for him to think that he could get something in return. When I asked which space I could start shooting in, it seemed like he snapped out of some other thought trail. He responded curtly, explaining that they were actually renovating and not much work was being done, so that there was hardly... Not now. Skype? Close?
Yes.
He responded curtly, explaining that they were actually renovating and not much work was being done, so there was hardly anything to see. I was confused by this sudden shift and also irritated that this somehow hadn't been communicated before. I asked when the renovations would be done. He said in something like 2 weeks. I asked if he could still show me through the space. Very begrudgingly, he began to talk about how it was actually too dangerous for me to walk through because of the machines, etc. He said he could make the brief exception and we left the office. He showed me through a maze of different spaces. There was lots of work going on and only a few rooms were being renovated. He broke off to talk to other people, ignoring me in some hallway, and then coming back to push me closer to the door. As we were almost back at the office, we passed a sort of reception area where there was a wall full of photos of work they had fabricated in the workshop, a sort of hall of fame. In the middle of the wall was this photo. We see a group of politicians centered around Angela Merkel and Viktor Medvedev turning the wheel of an oil pipe. It stood out to me, and I decided to ask him what it was. Barely pausing to consider, he responded rhetorically and said it was all fake. I asked him what he meant, and he said that it was all a photo op. They had put the stage together for this photo event, and that's it. I couldn't understand why he felt the sudden urge to tell me this. I could have guessed myself that this wasn't, in fact, a real oil pipe. I asked him whether it had been difficult to make, because it seemed impressive in size and all. Again, he responded quickly. He said no, they didn't have the facilities to make something that size. They had subcontracted it to a different workshop. At this point, he looked eager for me to leave. I had already overstayed my welcome. He said to call in 2 weeks. I thanked him and left. I started my way back home, still very early in the morning, aggravated that I hadn't been able to shoot the footage. I was upset that I hadn't been able to capture especially this image on the wall. I didn't know where it was from, but it stuck me for all the benign levels of absurdity it managed to contain on this formal level. The reason it struck me in the first place was its strangeness as a sculpture. You have a pipe, a supposed oil pipe for that matter, which in its nature is that it contains whatever is flowing through it. And in this sculpture, made for its image, it is wrapped in an additional transparent pipe. There's an added layer of transparency there to create the visual effect of something being revealed. I had no relationship to the people standing behind the pipe or the contract that was being signed against this backdrop. I had come to it through the workshop that had fabricated the stage prop, and yet it hadn't even done that. Nothing about this image was true. Nothing about the fact that it was hanging in that corridor as a trophy was true. If he hadn't made it, why was it hanging there? I began to think of it as an authorless fiction, assembled through chance slippages within our rationalized system of labor distribution. Everything is regulated and monitored in terms of production and output. Everything is made transparent. Our own actions seem to have very little value in living up to the measure set for us. And then we grab onto things in this arbitrary way to retrieve the sense of value lost in being transparent. It often seems to me that within a transparent structure, finding moments of truth necessarily come at the expense of someone else's deficiencies. We're constantly calling out other people's corruption. As our demand for transparency increases, so does our demand to find the culprits we can accuse. We would like our environments to be transparent to us, but only make ourselves transparent when forced to. In this, we all develop split personalities by default, one to deliver quotas and one employed full-time in hiding the embarrassing results. Between those personalities, fictions are created on their own. They don't have an author or any deliberate plot development. They're born out of that friction. Imagine the debris that accumulates on the inside of a kitchen sink pipe. Even the cleanest, most well-kept households will have pipes that accumulate these chance narratives. As long as the pipe is installed and functioning, those accumulations stay invisible to us. But here was a photograph which denied possible pipeline narratives by adding another layer. We desire things to be transparent to us, but on what terms? According to which interests? How many ways are there to make something transparent? You focus the lens on a single detail and the rest becomes blurred. The political story behind these representatives of nations coming together to celebrate an oil contract and the potential opacities of that story are of no consequence for me in my journey through that pipe. Incidentally, when I presented a version of this story in another place, a Russian artist approached me, explaining that she had been doing research into the corruption behind the actual Nord Stream oil contract being signed. That for now is meaningless, just another one of any possible cross-sections we could cut. Oop. But back to that day. I came home frustrated. The glimpse of a story made me feel that if I could get into a plexiglass workshop, more stories would slip from under the seamless, transparent objects being made there. I didn't want to wait 2 weeks to call back, and given that interaction, I started feeling like he probably wouldn't let me back in. I went back to my list of workshops in Berlin and went down the list one by one. Every single place said no. When I tried to be persuasive or ask why they wouldn't let me in, about half of the people I talked to had the same answer. They weren't willing to show the secrets of their trade or of their clients' objects. Every time I hung up the phone, my frustration grew, the sense of urgency grew, in trying to understand why the people who all made more or less the same transparent objects were so averse to being seen making them. What could I possibly compromise for them? I started looking into plexiglass, and among the information that I gathered to create various parts of the show, my first interaction with the material was this Wikipedia entry that shows me the diagram of its chemical properties. I couldn't help but see a stick figure with two heads, the schizophrenic performer torn between his own representation and his embarrassing secrets. Just for comparison, here's the chemical makeup of glass. This fragile, breakable material seems so stable when seen through its molecules. The plastic which bears the same name seems on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Without being able to access the material I had wanted, this nervous split was what I had to work with. The space between how we'd like to represent ourselves and the awkward inconsistencies we're left with. I did a quick search for Angela Merkel oil pipeline, and found tons of photos of that event, taken from multiple perspectives, from different people, with different cameras, behind the scenes, etc. We'd like to believe that if everyone is equipped with a camera, if we can see something from every angle, we should be able to know what's going on. But the views never show us anything of the endless narrative slips in between, of the cross-section of that pipe obscured in transparency. I wanted to tell this story within a video piece I made, but to add a fictional angle. If I told it, it would by default be a work of making transparent, of showing my audience the space behind the glass. Instead of telling it from my point of view, I decided to tell the story from the workshop manager's perspective, inventing him as a character. He comes home from work on the day we met. He's about to go to bed with his wife when she notices he's irritated. A few probing questions lead him to explain the encounter with me. When he explains why he's irritated, he's also forced to admit that he actually had no part in the contract he had claimed to have executed. Within their conversation, this is a disclosure to his wife, something she didn't know before. I thought it would be a funny parallel to bring this into the space of romantic disclosures, what is necessary to reveal and what is left unsaid. The day I finished the final script for the video, it was a nice hot summer day. My girlfriend and I went to Komelanke for a swim. We stayed a while and decided to get dinner at the Fischerhütte. The restaurant is split up with one terrace for fine dining and a large Biergarten for more casual meals and drinks. As we made our way to the Biergarten, I looked up at the terrace. I couldn't believe it, but the manager I had just turned into a fictional character was sitting there, locking eyes with a woman sitting across from him. But instead of the wife I had imagined him coming home to, I recognized the woman immediately. She was the secretary who had led me into the workshop.